Hello and welcome to National League Town, Mets fandom, Mets history, Mets life, with Long Island's own Greg Prince and Jeff Heisen. Hey, Greg.
Hey, Jeff.
On today's show, we talk about the American League. But first, when the 2023 schedule was introduced, interleague play seemed like a gimmick. In the past, we saw the other teams once every 3 years. It felt like interleague play was being forced down our throats as the Mets were playing every team every year, and we didn't like it. But after a year of seeing it in practice, Greg, how do you feel about it?
It did kind of feel like a throat forcer, as you said, when we got the news coming into 2023 that the Mets, instead of playing one intra-city rival, 4 to 6 games, and 4 to 5 chosen rivals in another division, everybody. Was it forced down our throats in the sense that if we wanted to watch the Mets every night, there'd be 46 nights or days when we'd be watching an American League team play the Mets, which is something I don't think either one of us ever has gotten used to the idea. Whatever our thoughts of an individual game, we've never gotten used to the idea that the American League is on our schedule. We grew up in a time when you played your division 18 times and the other division 12 times in your league period. Now, that's a while ago. And we entered another era in 1997, as you alluded to, playing the American League East that year and for several years. Then some time alternating between the Central and the West. Then it got a little cloudy. They didn't quite seem to have a pattern. Eventually, we got back into that rotating of divisions, give or take a pandemic that kind of changed that for a year. Now we landed in 2023, where it was decided, why are we depriving people? Why are we depriving people in St. Petersburg and in Cleveland and in Kansas City of the chance to see Pete Alonso and Francisco Lindor? That's one way of looking at it. Why are we being deprived of the chance to see their young stars or their established stars, whether in person at Citi Field or watching on TV? Not watching, say, a Royals-Tigers game, but a Mets-Royals game or a Mets-Tigers game. That's what we had in 2023. How do I feel about it? I don't love it, Jeff. I've experienced it. Went into it with a somewhat open mind, I think. When we first talked about it, I had hoped I would sort of accept it in the realm of other sports we watch, that, hey, teams we root for in the New York area, they go on West Coast road trips in the middle of winter. And that's fine because everything has traditionally been divided east and west. The NHL, the NBA, we've gotten a chance to be used to the National Football Conference, the American Football Conference, the AFL, bless its memory, has not existed since January of 1970. So we're used to the NFC playing the AFC a few times a year. I think it's 5 games a year now in the bizarre 17-game schedule that they have. But baseball was special. Baseball was ours, and we believe in the National League to the point that we put it in our name here. And even if we mean no offense to the American League, and we don't necessarily, we're National League fans. This is a National League team, and of course, it's a National League town. But we have been informed by those who make the schedule, those who sanction the schedule, stop worrying about that so much. You're a Major League Baseball team, you're fans of a Major League Baseball team, and why don't you just open your mind and enjoy the fact that you now get to play 29 different Major League Baseball teams, including 15 that you didn't necessarily see every single year? Well, I've just seen them this year. On the whole, I'm still not crazy about it, but I'm probably not who they're going after with this. I don't think they really care what dyed-in-the-wool baseball fans with dyed-in-the-wool baseball habits for the most part. care about these things or think about these things. They are looking to the entertainment-oriented person who might say, baseball, huh? Who's playing in the baseball game? Oh, we'll look at that. There's some guy I've heard of, and he's playing a team in my market, because people really talk like that. And maybe that helps. Maybe it helps build excitement across a year, and the years will continue, and you say, hey, you know, this baseball's pretty fun. I get to see that guy who plays for such and such. And just because I live in Cincinnati or Pittsburgh doesn't mean I don't get to see the hotshot who plays in Anaheim or Seattle. And maybe that's a good thing. I'm just telling you, I'm not crazy about having my habit of more than 50 years disturbed, even though it was already disturbed when my habit was about, oh, I don't know, 35 plus years strong. But that's just me. What do you think?
I think if you and I could push a button, we'd go back to playing the teams in the East 18 times, playing the teams in the West 12 times, and that would be enough. But we've gone past that. This year, it didn't bother me, the interleague play. And the reason it didn't bother me is because it presented new faces, something to look forward to, something that was different over these vapid last 2 months of the season. So instead of seeing Miami and Philadelphia over and over, we got to see some new faces. We got to see Corey Seager again. We got to see the players on Seattle. We got to see the players on Minnesota. It was different. It was a nice change. It shook things up. I don't know if I would have liked it if the Mets were in the heat of the battle for a wild card spot, because as you wrote in Faith and Fear on Monday, it gives you less of a chance to make up ground. If you're chasing Miami somehow, which the Mets would have been this year, you would have had fewer chances to play them. So I would have been railing against that. I don't know how I'll feel in a season where the Mets are in contention. But this year, it surprised me that it didn't bother me.
Well, I will say this for this flight of interleague play, and it's probably a term we're going to wind up retiring, because if it keeps going like this, it's just going to be play. We get to see some very good looking ballparks we wouldn't otherwise be staring at too often. We get to see some very good looking players who wouldn't cross our consciousness nearly as much. This may not be the year to judge its impact on a Met playoff pursuit, but we're going to be a little judgy anyway. There were 16 interleague series against 15 interleague opponents this year for the Mets. This was everybody's situation. Everybody has a natural rival. Can you folks see the air quotes I just made? I just made air quotes around natural rival. Y'all know what I mean. It means we got two series against the Yankees for four games. Everybody else we played for three games in one shot. The upshot from a National League standpoint was, yeah, we saw the National League East less. We not seen the Marlins as of this recording since early April. We won't see them till the stretch gets stretchy down the stretch. That's a long way to go. Even if you're sick of the Marlins, we're all sick of the Marlins every year, but it's weird not seeing a division rival for that long. It's weird that although we are not chasing Atlanta, I believe they eliminated us from their world. We don't see them after, what was it, the third week of August? That's bizarre. Maybe we would have appreciated it last year when we saw them on the final weekend. But again, everything is a construct, but still it doesn't quite feel natural. And I think that whatever we pick up from three games against indirect opponents, we lose something in terms of knowing who we're really competing against. For most of the previous 54 seasons that I've experienced, the National League East was the family you lived with, whether you were crazy about them or not. You checked in on them, they checked in on you regularly. You knew what they were up to, they knew what you were up to. And, you know, not seeing the Nationals as often as we did, not seeing the Phillies, the Marlins, the Braves. And I think like a little, I'm not sure if a little bit has been trimmed off the sides of some of the other Central and West opponents. I'm still getting over the fact that we don't see the Cardinals that often or the Dodgers that often, but that is hardly news. There's just something off about the National League side of everybody plays everybody. And I would not be surprised if in American League towns they're feeling the same way. I think the result is a season in which a lot has felt very ephemeral, very fleeting, even if you're kind of enjoying getting familiar with the Texas Rangers for 3 days. Who are the Texas Rangers to you? Where do they go? But that's how we dealt with it. And, being the kinds of fans who think about these things, here's what we're going to do. After those 16 interleague series against 15 interleague opponents, in which, by the way, the Mets went 19-27, a little not as good as they were against the National League to date, which is not to say they were all that great against the National League. I'm going to take Jeff down sort of memory lane here for the last several months. We're going to talk about where we've been, where the Mets have been vis-a-vis American League opponents. There's any impressions he has or I have, we'll share them about those series, about the players, the ballparks, whatever. And I'm also going to ask Jeff something just to make this more than about trying to remember what the hell happened in April and May. When I bring up an American League team, I'm going to ask him, what do you think of? What do you think about? What is something that comes to mind as a lifelong National League fan, a lifelong Mets fan who never really had to think about these teams for more than a second, unless we were playing them in the World Series? What do you associate with them? And we're not looking to necessarily take shots at anybody, even teams we really don't like. But I think one of the things that's sort of likely to go out the window a little bit here, the idea of having a favorite American League team. But you can tell me if you run into that, because why would I feel good about any team that you have to play? You know, it's not like I have a favorite National League Central team or like that. But again, that's me. So, Jeff, why don't we start where the Mets started in interleague terms this year, way back in April, when we thought we had a contender and we thought there was a team that was going to challenge the 1962 Mets for worst team ever. We played Oakland right after playing them last September, by the way, like a few series later, practically. And we swept Oakland. I don't know if you remember anything about it, but what do you remember, if anything? And what's your Oakland A's association?
I remember that they had an usher take down Senga strikeout signs. And that was distasteful. But one thing that's happened with interleague play is that it's brought abstract teams, the concept of teams that we don't think about that much, into the forefront of our minds every year. And that happened with Oakland because we saw them last year and we saw them, as you said, right away this year. And it made me feel a little more empathetic toward their, empathetic, to use a term that we've discussed on this show, toward their plight with the projected move to Las Vegas. And let me tell you a story. I was in New Mexico a few weeks ago on business, and I had a day off, and I took a tramway up the Sandia Mountains in Albuquerque. Beautiful, well worth doing. Get to the top, and I'm walking around, I'm leaning over the railing, looking down at the beautiful sight. I look at the couple next to me, a couple in their 30s, and the guy had a short sleeve shirt and he was all tatted up. And one of his tattoos was a Oakland A's symbol, the A in color. Beautiful. And I looked at him, I said, the next time that I hear Rob Manfred talk about how there aren't enough good fans in Oakland, how they don't care, I'm going to think of you. And he said, thank you, brother. And I said, even though your team beat my team in the 73 World Series. And he said, I understand, brother. Wasn't my brother, but for that moment, we were brothers in baseball. And so that's what interleague play has done. It made me feel a kinship with a stranger on a mountain in New Mexico about his team.
We are all siblings in the world of Rob Manfred against Rob Manfred, I believe. And yeah, we caught the A's in April just before that Las Vegas news became real. And we also caught them on the weekend that they decided to invite as many Oakland A's from 1973 as they could for something of a reunion, which was appropriate because, as you alluded to, the Mets A's World Series was 50 years ago this year. One of those players was the great Vida Blue, his last public appearance, because he would pass away soon after. I think any Mets fan of our vintage immediately goes back to the, you know, the green and gold softball tops and the Charlie Finley business and everything about that era. And I could never really dislike those A's because they were so much fun compared to what felt like the gray and the white of the rest of baseball, even though, yeah, they did beat us in seven games. Just from a quick Mets standpoint, we did sweep that series and we walked 17 times, literally 17 times in one game, set a team record on that Friday night. And, you know, and again, this lived down to everything about what you'd heard about the Oakland A's being just this brought down to the carcass organization. And yet, for the next 2 days, I think they were both one-run games. I think one went to 10 innings. Now, listen, you could play a close game against anybody any weekend. That happened to be the first weekend and maybe the second series, going back to that Milwaukee series a little earlier in April where we were swept and looked terrible being swept, where I really began to think, you know what, there's something about this team that, meaning the Mets, something about this team that's off, because a better Mets team would have handled Oakland better all three games. I just want to say that you were in New Mexico on business. I want to alert our listeners in the drug enforcement community that Jeff's business did not involve meeting a man named Heisenberg. So that was April. May, the interleague schedule marched on with a visit to Detroit, which may sound familiar to at least one of us. Detroit was not supposed to be a very good team, and Detroit hasn't been a very good team. The Mets showed no sign there was anything wrong with the Detroit Tigers. They were swept three, and you could probably tell me more about it than I could tell you.
Yeah, I went to Detroit. I was at the day-night doubleheader on Wednesday. Tuesday was rained out. I was excited about seeing the Mets. I was excited about seeing the Mets win against an inferior team. Well, which team was inferior? The Mets lost all three games. And that was a pivotal series as far as my perception of the 2023 Mets goes. As far as the Tigers, I never thought about them that much, except that's the team of Hank Greenberg, a very, very important player to members of the tribe. And when I went to Detroit, one thing I noticed is that they didn't have a Hall of Fame. For a team with such a great history, I got to the ballpark early so I could walk around their Hall of Fame, and they didn't have one. And I thought that was disappointing. They had kiosks on the third base side, one for every decade in Tiger history, and those were fine. But I thought that they deserved a Hall of Fame. Even the Mets have a Hall of Fame. They had one kicking and screaming, but they have one. The Braves honor their history beautifully. It's not in a separate structure, but they do. I'm looking forward to going to St. Louis next season, perhaps. They apparently have a good Hall of Fame, but the Tigers didn't. I was disappointed in that. I was disappointed in the weekend. I wasn't disappointed in the ballpark, but it was still nice to visit Detroit.
They have a bunch of statues, though, don't they?
A lot of statues in the corner. Very nice statues.
Yeah. Well, again, Tigers are one of those organizations that from a distance I've always admired. I've always loved the home uniform. I once read a description of it as the closest thing baseball has to formal wear. You know, Hank Greenberg absolutely is my Tiger on a pedestal, not just on in a statue. And I will throw in the name Al Kaline. One of the first baseball cards I remember holding was an Al Kaline baseball card. And still remember him passing 3,000 hits. Meant a great deal. Meant a great deal watching on the couch last year. I think we talked about a little bit when we talked about a 3,000 hit club. Miguel Cabrera. I was very disappointed he was not up for playing against the Mets. He's had something of a farewell tour this year. So, you know, they've had greats. They are, you know, a foundational team of the American League. And I will just say that for all my dismay over the idea of interleague play, that one of the bonuses of my life was it motivated me to see Tiger Stadium before it was torn down or, you know, repurposed as a different kind of field over the years. But obviously the Tigers moved to Comerica Park. The Mets played the Tigers way back when, 1997. And that was a thrill. And I still think of that as the sort of the epitome of Tigers baseball. The junior member of the junior circuit was next on our dance card. It's hard to believe. The Tampa Bay Rays were 25 years old this season. Seems like just yesterday they were the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, and we didn't know who the hell they were or why the hell they existed. But they changed their name a little. They shortened it. Had a lot of success since doing that. They were off to a great start this year, and they began to stumble ever so slightly. And as we speak, they're in very good shape for the postseason, or at least, you know, they're going to the postseason, that much we know. They took one game from the Mets when they came to Citi Field in May, looking like the Tampa Bay Rays, and the Mets were kind of stumbling along. And then we took two out of three from the next two from them to take two out of three. And that was the beginning of probably the best week of the season. We'll get to the other half of that in a moment. One of those Rays games is a literal Mets classic on SNY now, where it's one of Francisco Alvarez's coming out games in terms of hitting home runs. Pete, I believe, had the walk-off. And one of Tyler McGill's best games of the year was against the Rays. It was a pitcher's duel that wound up 3-2. In an afternoon affair that I remember fondly, because it felt like, now, hey, McGill's getting it together, the Mets are getting it together. Well, I don't know that that happened, but here are the Rays, kind of at odds in that they're a model organization in terms of winning, and they have, we didn't see it this year, a horrible ballpark situation, and you're never sure if they're going to stay where they are. What do you think about the Tampa Bay Rays?
I wonder if we're going to be thinking about them as the Tampa Bay Rays in 5 years, because there's a chance that they end up moving because of their stadium situation being so in flux. I think about Tampa positively generally, though, because they are not the Yankees, the same way I feel positively about the Blue Jays and the Orioles and the Red Sox, all of the AL East teams that aren't the Yankees. So I think about them positively, but I don't think about them that much, other than the fact that one day I was driving and I put on 89 on XM, which was the baseball channel. And for some reason, they had their post-game show on. And it was a call-in show, an old-fashioned call-in show. And I listened to it the whole drive. I could care less about what they were talking about, but it reminded me of Mets Extra, and it made me miss that, and I wish that the Mets had that. So the Rays have a Mets Extra type show, and I ended up listening to it the whole hour I was driving, even though, again, the fact that, and then the people were calling in and like, why did the manager do this? Why did the manager do that? Just like we would have done. And the accents were different, but the passion was there. And I appreciated that. And it made me connect a little bit with fans of the Rays. And it also made me miss Mets Extra.
Yeah, well, the word on Tampa Bay Rays fans, according to Tampa Bay Rays fans and by metrics, is that they care a lot. They have great TV ratings locally, which sort of belies the attendance figures, because the word from Tampa Bay, and I want to stress, it's Tampa Bay. That's the name of the team. Tampa is a different city from where they play, St. Petersburg. Someone who went to college in that market, it always bothers me that it's not gotten right very often. But I can tell you from what I know about St. Petersburg is they did put a not great stadium in a not accessible area. Now, again, you really want to go to Tropicana Field, you'll find your way there. But traffic is murder, the hours that it would take to get there. And people do care, and they do like to watch on TV. And I'm not telling anybody anywhere that they have to go to games. I hope that that isn't something that ultimately works against these people. But I did read over the weekend, although I've read this so many times for so many years, that there is a new stadium plan on the drawing board, and the owner there is like, well, we'll pay half of the exorbitant amount and whatever. We'll see if that really happens. You know, whenever I do the Immaculate Grid and there's a Rays thing, a Rays clue, I panic because, like, do I know anybody who's ever been on the Rays? And I immediately think, okay, Evan Longoria, okay, he's not there anymore, but maybe he played for one of these other teams. and Fred McGriff, because he's from Tampa and he went to Tampa, and, you know, again, his Hall of Fame, I just said Tampa, he went to Tampa Bay being from Tampa. His Hall of Fame plaque does not indicate a team on his cap because he played for so many teams, but it meant a lot to those who were familiar with Fred McGriff to see him have the opportunity to go home. So those are probably like the two players I think of when I'm not thinking about some guy who just shut us out for six innings. We've played the Rays. I mentioned that it was probably the best week of the year when we played the Rays. The other half of that week at Citi Field was playing the Guardians, aka the Tribe. We swept the Guardians at Citi Field. Every one of them was an exciting come-from-behind game. I really looked forward to that series. I attended the first night of that series. I wanted to see Andrés Giménez, who we sent for Francisco Lindor a couple of years ago. I wanted to see and welcome back Amed Rosario, who is no longer a Cleveland Guardian, was traded for Noah Syndergaard, who was also no longer a Cleveland Guardian. Cleveland Guardians finished last year very well, went to the playoffs. Not the case this year. And maybe we caught them as they were spiraling, and we were able to pause our spiral. What's your thoughts? Cleveland Guardians, a.k.a. the Tribe.
That's a team that I don't think much about. I remember when I was younger reading about Lou Boudreau and the shift in 1946 against the Red Sox and Ted Williams being incensed. That's a team that I really haven't thought that much about. I should think about them more, especially since the Mets will be playing them so often. Mets will be visiting there. I do like the fact that they changed their name out of respect, and I hope to learn more about them.
Yeah, Cleveland was tough to get a handle on when we were growing up in a baseball sense because they never were on TV where we would see them. Guess they were playing somebody locally, a team we're bound to talk about in a few minutes, but they were not on the radar of the New York Mets, and they were not on the radar of the game of the week or Monday Night Baseball because they were almost annually awful. Then came a new stadium in 1994. It was called Jacobs Field. It's had at least one name since then. I guess just one name, Progressive Field. They became a good team. They became a perennial powerhouse type of team for a while. They went to a couple of World Series in the 90s. They were an exciting team to watch, and that was the team that was kind enough in between World Series to send us Carlos Baerga. And later, they arranged for us to have Roberto Alomar and ultimately Francisco Lindor. One of those things is not like the other in Met terms, but I liked Baerga and I like Lindor. And Alomar is in the Hall of Fame. You know, we devoted an episode to baseball movies we love. We talked about the Cleveland Indians of Major League, and that is probably still the best Cleveland Indians, Cleveland Guardians team we have yet to see, including the 2016 World Series, where they came oh so close to winning their first World Series since 1948, in the days of Bob Feller and, you know, 1954, Bob Lemon. You have great pitching, great teams. You mentioned Lou Boudreau. There's great history there. Even you know, 70s and 80s, when they weren't doing much, they had some good players. All teams do, I suppose. I think if there's one team that, you know, without claiming I have a favorite American League team, one team I'd love to see win a World Series on some year that the Mets don't, which is a lot of them, by the way, I really love for Cleveland to win its World Series, because not too many people living have memory of Cleveland winning a World Series. And I have been blessed through the years to have a handful of friends who are from Cleveland or Northeast Ohio, who are big Guardians fans, who were big Indians fans. I would like them to be happy. And, you know, again, they are a franchise that for the most part gives me a good vibe, kind of like the Tigers. So again, I don't really want to get in the way of the Cleveland Guardians, but for 3 days we did this year, and for 3 days we will next year. And that's just the way it goes. How about the Jay it goes? The Toronto Blue Jays. There's a team you don't think about necessarily. I don't know, maybe you do. But I was minding my own business when the Toronto Blue Jays came to Citi Field in early June. I was excited to attend the middle game of that series because it was Mets Hall of Fame Day, featuring the induction, by the way, of somebody who helped the Toronto Blue Jays win a World Series, Al Leiter. So there's been a good deal of crossover through the years between the two franchises. And there was nothing bad to think about the Blue Jays except when we were playing them. And I wasn't too happy with them. this year because they beat us three straight at the outset of June, just as it was becoming completely unavoidable to realize the team we had on our hands. We had just won three against Philadelphia, and we thought, okay, now they're getting it out of their system, and then the system just took over. But Blue Jays are a good team. The Blue Jays were a good team that weekend, not just because they're playing the Mets, and as we speak, they are in the thick of a playoff fight themselves. Let's go north of the border to ask you, what do you think about those Toronto Blue Jays?
Well, I think about Jose Bautista and his brief time with the Mets. I kind of like the Blue Jays. Bobichette's on my fantasy team and helping me. I don't mind them. My younger son's girlfriend is from Toronto. Yes, he has a girlfriend who lives in Canada. Sometimes he has a picture with her and he's wearing a Mets hat and she's wearing a Blue Jays hat. That was the weekend that things, as you said, started to go really, really badly for the Mets, including that Saturday game after that beautiful ceremony. That Saturday game, I don't want to go there. That's not the purpose of this discussion. But I do have fond thoughts of the Blue Jays and wish them well.
Yeah, Toronto begat the first visit to Atlanta. Was I just asking for more visits to Atlanta earlier in this episode? You know what, when I think of the Blue Jays, just in a non-denominational sense, I think back to opening packs of baseball cards in March of 1977, probably the last year where I was really into buying baseball cards in March. And there were Blue Jays tumbling out. And it felt like, because this was really the first full-on expansion situation to which I was privy when I started watching baseball in 69. Yeah, we had the Padres and the Pilots and the Expos and the Royals. But to me, they could have been here for 100 years. I didn't know who they were because they were all new to me. This is the first year I was dealing with new teams, the Blue Jays and another team we'll get to. And they all seemed, just looking at the logo, the airbrushed logo on batting helmets and baseball caps, and just this sense, once I began to see video clips from Exhibition Stadium in Toronto, it all seems so fresh and brisk. That's always what I think of when I think of the 1977 Blue Jays. I know they lost a ton of games, and it would take them a while to become a competitive team. But that stadium, I think it was on Lake Ontario or pretty close to it. I could be completely wrong. I once was in a car that drove by there when I was visiting Toronto. But just names that were suddenly in your consciousness that hadn't existed, as far as you were concerned, in baseball before. Doug Ault and Otto Velez, who I remember as a Yankee a little bit, and suddenly he's having a great April. Dave Romanchik, that's a name that sticks with me from that era. And the last of Ron Fairley. And it was like, wow, isn't this great? It's like a new team in a city I've never really thought about for baseball, other than, you know, you'd see old baseball cards, look on the back, and you'd see Toronto used to be somebody's minor league affiliate. But, you know, that's a team that grew into a real major market franchise as the 80s went on. They built Sky Dome, and they won a couple of World Series with Al Leiter in the 1990s. And it was just a scene and a happening. And then they just, you know, like a lot of these teams, when I'm compelled to think about them, which is either when they play the Mets or when I'm doing Immaculate Grid, I think, like, God, I can't think of anybody from the last X number of years because my memory is stuck in those baseball card packs in 1977. But yeah, like you, it's like, yeah, the Blue Jays, cool. Not that weekend in June, though. We are going to make the first of our two stops with the American League franchise closest geographically to where the Mets live. So we can just have half a discussion about them now, because we're gonna come back around a little bit. Let's not waste all our vitriol. We played the Yankees in June, and we split two games at Citi Field. The Yankees not having that great a season, it turns out. I'm proud to say I don't pay that much attention to them. I don't really know who's on the team. I know the major figures, and I know I do check to see how they're doing in general, but I will just share a reminiscence quickly of my favorite Yankees fan, my mechanic for many years, who recently moved and left me with a new mechanic who I hope is as good and honest as this man was, even though, yes, this man was a Yankees fan. It doesn't mean a bad person, just made a bad life choice. But I used to come in, drop off my keys, and we would talk baseball. He watched the Mets a lot because he loved Gary, Keith, and Ron and didn't really care for the Yes Network. And he would go on about how bad Aaron Hicks was and how bad some pitcher was. I'm thinking, I just kind of nodded along because I'm happy to hear him complain about the Yankees. It means they're not doing well. But ultimately, they're always doing well. So you couldn't get too comfortable with that. Why don't we treat ourselves, since we are at Citi Field for this half of the Yankee discussion? I will ask specifically, before we get into Yankee thoughts, can't believe we're saying that on this podcast. What do you think of playing the Yankees every year? No matter what happens, we play the Yankees every year. We've done this since 1997. We have some marvelous memories. Started with Dave Malicki and wound through Matt Franco. And I can mention dozens of others, and I can mention more dozens of others that weren't so marvelous. But putting aside everybody plays everybody, what does it mean to you that we have to play this team that we never had to play, but we grew up around people like my mechanic? I don't mean, you know, people who rooted not for the Mets. Loved baseball, loved a New York team, didn't love the Mets, rubbed us the wrong way. What's it like playing them every year?
I find it to be annoying. I think that the games take on a greater import for the media, for the fans, than they really have. And if there were four games instead of three games, two games in Cleveland, two games at Citi Field, it would be better. The games seem to be taking on greater importance, so that when the Mets line up, and if McGill was pitching in one of the games, I go, why? Why is McGill pitching against the Yankees? We should have our top pitcher pitching against the Yankees. The game is just as important as any other against the American League team. I think it feels like the rivalry, quote unquote, is being forced down our throat. And it doesn't need to be, because the rivalry exists in New York on a daily basis. Whether you go to your mechanic and he's a Yankee fan, or you see people walking around the streets and they have Yankee hats on, I don't think you need it to know that there's a rivalry. It feels like it takes on greater importance than it needs to be.
Well, first off, it's good to know the tourism economy is percolating along. When you see Yankee hats, you know the people are coming in from out of town and picking up a hat. I was happy in the age of growing up with the Mayor's Trophy game and things like that. Those exhibition games from Fort Lauderdale or St. Petersburg that would be beamed back, and living in the hypothetical. And if we had played one regular season game against the Yankees, the very first one, and we'd just stopped doing that, I would have marvelous, marvelous memories of Dave Malicki night in Yankee Stadium. But yeah, you know, it's a golden goose. And for the most part, they have sold out. And, you know, you're in this era, when the whole idea is to gin up excitement, you're not going to say, hey, Mets and Yankees, go back to neutral corners and maybe you'll be in a World Series again. So I understand why it exists. I understand why people go. I've been to only two Subway Series games at Citi Field since it opened. One the first year, one when somebody was nice enough to invite me to a seven-line outing in 2017. The Mets lost both. There were too many fans of the other team. And I said, I don't need to do this again. But we live with the Yankees, and we will live with the Yankees a few notches down the line as we tour the American League here. And said, we're going to go to a National League city that is being held hostage. We are going to go to Houston. Houston came into the National League with the Mets in 1962 as the Colt 45s, better known as the Astros a few years later. And then, because somebody did the math and said, wouldn't it be more convenient to have an even number of teams in each league? Never mind, that would mean an interleague game every day somewhere. It's always interleague o'clock. Goodbye, Astros. Goodbye, National League town, brethren. You know what? It's worked out for them pretty well, I think, because they won a couple of World Series. And in June of 2023, as the Mets were just reeling, the defending world champion Astros didn't help. And they took two out of three from the Mets at Minute Maid Park. What is your temperature taking on the Houston Astros these days?
Are they in the American League? Because sometimes I forget. Am I the only one who does that?
I don't think you're the only one. I've gotten used to it. I've gotten used to Milwaukee being in the National League, by the way. It does feel like two different franchises, I think.
Yeah, the Astros, I still can't put the cheating scandal behind me. Makes me feel badly for Carlos Beltran, even though he was one of the leaders of the cheating scandal, because he was one of the few, if the only person, who paid a price for participating in it, as he was dismissed quickly as manager of the Mets while all the players kept playing, and the bench coach and the head coach were back at it in 1 year. So I still can't get past that. And their slimy owner, Jim Crane. I enjoyed the book by Andy Martino on the cheating scandal. I look forward to reading Evan Dreilich's book on the cheating scandal. That's my association. It's also, they're a great team. Although I wish Justin Verlander well, but they're a great team.
They sure are. They've been a great team. However, they've done it for a bunch of years now. Funny, I found myself thinking about Carlos Beltran just the other night. There was this story during the 2017 season about, you know, what an incredible leader he was on the team, specifically how he allowed himself to sort of be the butt of a team-wide joke, like we're gonna bury his glove once and for all in center field because all he can do is DH now, and he had a good laugh, and they all had a good laugh, and he kept reading about, you know, what a great influence he was on the players, the younger players, and then, you know, the whole thing turns out, yeah, you know what he was really good at? Figuring out signs in an illicit way, but we still love Carlos Beltran for what he did here. I still admire the hell out of the Houston Astros for their success in various postseason series against the Yankees. Let's not overlook that. To get to as many World Series as they've been in, they have stepped over the carcass of the New York Yankees, and we don't mind that. But yeah, I just find it hard to associate the Houston Astros of the American League with the Houston Astros we remember from the National League, which was, you know, just such a staple of our lives for so many years, never more so than October of 1986. But, you know, even right up to the Bagwell and Biggio denouement of their eras. But, you know, they're doing well. Like you said, we passed the All-Star break now, and we're going to start playing some more American League teams, starting with a team that never came to Shea Stadium to play the Mets and had only been in Citi Field, I think, twice before this year, the Chicago White Sox. And this is where, like, it begins to really have trouble rolling off the tongue. Hey, the Mets are playing the White Sox this week. And it always just, again, I think this is what I keep running into and have been running into lately, especially. What the hell are we doing playing the White Sox? I don't want to beat the White Sox. The White Sox have never done anything to me except for drafting Tom Seaver one fine January day. But who can blame a team for wanting Tom Seaver? We took 2 out of 3 from the White Sox because not that it stops us or that an opponent isn't very good, but they're not very good this year, which is too bad for them. But 2 out of 3 from our arch rivals, the Chicago White Sox. What did you think seeing that team from the South Side?
I always liked their uniform. I can't stand their owner. He's a piece of garbage. Jerry Reinsdorf, of course. But I always like seeing their beautiful uniforms. You mentioned the Tigers uniforms before. And I always kind of like those Chicago White Sox. I thought Wilbur Wood was cool with that knuckleball. I remember seeing them play the Yankees at Shea Stadium and rooting for the White Sox, of course. And they weren't the Cubs. We didn't like the Cubs. We grew up feverishly disliking the Cubs. And so the White Sox were not the Cubs. They were the second team in town. And President Obama liked the White Sox also. So I kind of didn't mind the White Sox.
Yeah, the White Sox, they're not necessarily my, quote, favorite American League team, but I think that they've sort of stood in there a few times. I was thrilled when they won the 2005 World Series. I was thrilled when I visited Comiskey Park, the real Comiskey Park, before its demolition. I saw them play there in 1989, and it's still my favorite ballpark ever, with the soundtrack provided by the organist Nancy Faust, and just so many cultural associations with the White Sox, for better or worse, the the movie Eight Men Out, one of the great, but we talked about baseball movies, but really one of the great historical baseball movies specifically that you're ever going to see. And yeah, Tom Seaver wore their one of their more bizarre uniforms. But again, when they didn't have the super classy uniforms, they always had fun uniforms. And I think, again, rewinding in my head to 1967 baseball cards, my introduction to the White Sox. One of the first White Sox I ever knew of was a fellow named Tommy Agee, who had one of those little all-rookie team trophies on the front. And then I realized, hey, that's the same Tommy Agee who's on the Mets, because I may have been looking through some old cards a couple of years later. So, yeah, there's nothing but good vibes. Like I said, I don't want to beat up on the White Sox. I don't want them to beat up on us either. And I'm sorry they're not doing that well. And, yeah, their owner's been there forever, and I don't know too many White Sox fans are too happy about that. But that's what you get with one pair of socks. Hey, what do you get with another pair of socks? We were lucky to have a trip to Fenway Park right after we played the White Sox to go to Boston, play the Red Sox. I'm the Red Sox neighboring company accepted here in New York, the most famous of American League franchises, perhaps the most successful, give or take the Astros, American League franchise of the current century. Four World Series, none most recently, but not that long ago. We lost 2 out of 3 to the Red Sox. One of those games, one of those weird, let's start the game, even though we know it's going to rain. Let's stop the game. Let's start tomorrow. Did the game take place today or yesterday? We don't know. But we lost 2 out of 3 to the Red Sox. We played the Red Sox. I can think at least one very meaningful series. But what's your Red Sox thoughts?
Red Sox are a team that's always in the forefront for Mets fans, not just because of 1986, but because of the Omer Santos game. And I'm very, very proud to say that I was there with my younger son, May 23rd, 2009, my first visit, not his first visit to Fenway. I had been there when I was in college. But we were there when Omer Santos hit that ball that went over the wall. We knew it went over the wall right away. And they always show that on SNY whenever the Mets play the Red Sox, and always brings back a nice memory. Also a nice memory for Mets fans is the way the Red Sox came back and beat the Yankees in the playoffs when they were down 3-0. So some good memories involving the Red Sox.
Yeah, that was superb. October of 2004, the ALCS, until he actually lined up on the wrong side of the diamond at Shea Stadium. The Red Sox uniform was great. Seeing Tom Seaver land such a storied franchise to finish up his career. We wish that had never happened, that he only stayed in one uniform, but as long as he was making a bit of a tour himself. I got a kick out of him being on the Red Sox for a couple of months in 1986. Listen, I did have a favorite American League team when I was 15 years old thereabouts, and it was the Boston Red Sox because I came to realize, you know what? They're the Yankees, arch rivals. Therefore, they are my favorite American League team, and I spent the entire summer of 1978 walking around Long Beach, New York in a Red Sox hat. And I have no regrets about that decision, despite the way 1978 worked out. It's funny trying to think about the Red Sox before 2004 and after 2004. You know, it's such a different vibe, I think. And granted, I'm not hanging around Boston, so I couldn't tell you if it really is for their fans. But again, everything for decades was about when are we finally going to win one here in New England? And you really wanted that for these people, sort of like I described for Cleveland before. But there was, you know, such a specific atmosphere to the Red Sox, to New England, to that relationship with its fans. And yeah, part of that was suffering. But you know, I wanted the suffering end for those people, not just because they were the Yankees arch rival. It was just such a special franchise, and it still is, but in a different way because they have succeeded beyond their wildest dreams. For what is it now? About the past 20 years, 4 world championships. It's amazing. The one name I still think of, though, sort of like we talked about Al Kaline before, is playing Carl Yastrzemski. He may not be the greatest Red Sox ever, but he is the Red Sox. As far as I'm concerned, again, one of those 1967 baseball cards I had learned how to spell Yastrzemski at a tender age and have remained conscious of that useful fact. And, he just one of that was, it's kind of what I miss. I miss the mystique of not playing the American League because, yeah, you might say, congratulations, you get to see great players from all over the major leagues now. Yeah, but you know what? I sort of like the idea that Al Kaline was a guy I got to see in the All-Star game. And if I got to see him in the playoffs or the World Series, not necessarily against the Mets, great. So I thought about Carl Yastrzemski, Carlton Fisk, and guys like that. How I felt about another player I will mention as the embodiment of his franchise in a couple of teams. I don't need to see them every year. Just, I know it sounds odd, like, gee, I only want to eat once a week. Food's so much better then. But I don't think that's what it's like. I got plenty of National Leaguers to watch. I don't need to watch great American League players unless I make an effort to see them. So I kind of miss that a little bit. I don't miss the Yankees when I'm not watching them, but we're back to them very briefly because we did play two games at Yankee Stadium, the new one, obviously. 2009 version. We split those two. Let me make this a specific question. Can you identify a favorite Yankee?
Of all time, not now.
Sure. Yeah, all time.
All time.
Who do you like despite being a Yankee?
I always like reading about the Babe. I always like reading about Mickey Mantle. And I went to an orthodontist in Forest Hills who told me his neighbor was Whitey Ford, the famous pitcher, also as seen on The Simpsons. Hall of Famer Whitey Ford. So there are some Yankees that I've liked from Yankee history, mostly pre-62, but I do like reading about Yankee history. How about you?
Yeah, it's funny watching old-timer ceremonies from there, which I have done many years. This weekend, I did not get around to it. Caught some of David Wells' interesting takes on life and modernity. We'll leave that for another time. Over the years, when I've watched Yankee old-timer ceremonies, my reaction is usually you don't see too many guys from before the 60s, and you're having a hard time finding guys from the 60s at this point, I imagine. These guys were history. So if you brought Hank Bauer out, just to pick a name, great. Happy to see this man alive and well. And yes, he's putting on a uniform I don't associate with great things, but I understand. I understand they have a lot of success. I think it's great they celebrate their success. I always got a kick out of Don Larsen coming back. Guys like that. When it begins to get a little more modern, I begin to get a little antsy, even if I didn't see those players necessarily, because some of those guys played with some of the guys I associate with beginning to not wanting to know that there's another team in New York. So, yes, I mean, Mickey Mantle, I read Jane Levy's biography, and, again, he's up there with Willie and the Duke. How can you have anything bad to say? Whitey Ford, my father watched him in high school as a fellow high school student. They were both in Queens at the same time, and my father saw him pitch for, I believe it was for Aviation High in the Sunnyside or somewhere around there. The Babe is the Babe, for God's sake. You'd have to be made of stone to not think amazing things there. Lou Gehrig is, again, we both hook, line, and sinker, the Yankee Stadium, all of that, Pride of the Yankees, as we discussed. And the ever-intriguing, even if he was a very interesting guy, Joe DiMaggio. The Richard Ben Kramer biography was an eye-opener. Brought me back to that whole mindset era that Joe D, even if you look at his statistics, you say, aren't they a little light? Why are people always, what was this greatest living player business about? And yet, yeah. My father, who didn't really react to sports heroes per se, couldn't stop talking about the time he like walked by Joe DiMaggio somewhere. Mm. And you understood that. So again, old timers day, the greats and even like the very goods from before I came along, fine. When it starts to get into the 70s I really feel uncomfortable because, oh my God, those people made my adolescence miserable, but I respect them. The Reggie and the Nettles and the Pinella era. I couldn't stand those teams. Catfish Hunter no longer with us, but I always liked Catfish Hunter. Once you get into the 80s, it's like, okay, well, they didn't win anything, but they were still, you know, a threat. Once you get into the 90s, I don't want to know about them. I'm going to answer the question, though. I have two answers. One of an actual Yankee I saw play, Ron Guidry. He was a terrific pitcher. Loved watching him in theory. Didn't love watching him succeed and ultimately doom my 1978 Red Sox. But again, to me, he was, you know, Seaver was out of town. He was the pitcher for a couple of years in this town. I really admired the fact that when Goose Gossage got into a clubhouse scrap with Cliff Johnson, these things that we knew about so much because we lived in New York, we couldn't help but read about it. Ron Guidry, coming off his fantastic Cy Young season, said, hey, I'll be the closer. You need a closer? I'll be the closer. I thought that was like such a team thing to do. I mean, just the way he befriended Yogi Berra and drove him around in later years, I thought that was fantastic. So number 49, I have a soft spot there. The guy I admire, Jim Boughton. Jim Boughton changed the way we look at baseball when he wrote Ball Four and continued to be a guy who just, you know, stood for free thinking and just, you know, when we think about baseball, we think about the world that Ball Four gave us. And yeah, he was a Seattle Pilot and a Houston Astro of the year he wrote about, but you know, he came up as a Yankee and told stories about the Yankees. Made them both look not very good, and he made them, you know, he had a soft spot. That was his team, obviously. Although he grew up a New York Giants fan, I like to mention, he's from New Jersey. But one of the great things that the Yankees, under George Steinbrenner, did in my lifetime of not being crazy about them was they finally settled their differences with Boughton after Ball Four. That Mickey Mantle, he called Mickey Mantle and left a message to give his condolences about Mickey's son dying. And Mickey left him a message saying, Jim, I really appreciate that. And just so you know, I was never the one keeping out old timers. I don't know what the story is with that. And eventually they actually invited him back one time in 1998. And he got a great reception. Felt really good about that. And, you know, we are lesser because Jim Boughton passed away a few years ago. But, you know. Any team that put Jim Boughton on the map can't be all evil. Let's put it that way. So I was going to say all bad. I can't go that far.
What's Jim Boughton's great quote? One among many. You spend your whole life gripping a baseball, and then one day you realize it was the other way around.
Absolutely. And baseball continued to grip us in 2023, even as the Mets fell through the floor, which they were doing. When the trade deadline came along, and certainly afterwards, they were not at their best. We didn't know who they were. And it just so happened they were in American League ballparks. The first of them, Kansas City, who, like Oakland, we were informed, and all we had to do was look at the standings, was a team that was one of the worst in recent memory. Yet, when the Mets played them, the Royals swept the Mets. Not the first time the Mets lost a series to the Royals. What's your Kansas City vibe?
Not good, because not because of that series, but I still can't shake 2015. I still think of Lucas Duda's throw, Cespedes' error in game one. I don't have any good thoughts about the Kansas City Royals.
That's very fair. You know what? I had anywhere from benign positive to very positive thoughts about the Kansas City Royals through the 70s and 80s, because they were always taking on and occasionally succeeding against teams I absolutely despised. None other than the Yankees, finally beating them in 1980 in the ALCS after losing three of those in the 70s. Taking on a Philadelphia Phillies team I couldn't stand and playing well, but not winning the 1980 World Series. And then with help from umpire Don Denkinger, or is it Denkinger? Never sure. They beat the Cardinals when we were at our absolute most venomous toward the St. Louis Cardinals in 1985. And, you know, I mentioned, you know, in the vein of Al Kaline and Carl Yastrzemski came along a little bit later. George Brett, one of those guys I just always, always think about when you say Kansas City Royals. And the fact that we never saw George Brett play against the Mets was fine with me. 2015 changed all that. I still can't look at the Kansas City Royals, including in their current incarnation. I believe there's just one Royal left on that team, Salvador Perez from 2015. That's one too many for my taste. Any recollection of how the 2015 World Series went down is not welcome. Again, the interleague ethos of today gave us a good look at Bobby Witt Jr., a guy I'd heard of. But, oh, he's really good. He was really good against the Mets that week. A lot of Royals were good against the Mets that week. I was able to appreciate that on some level, I suppose. And again, this was the week where it was Rafael Ortega and Jonathan Arraez. And before we understood just how great he is, DJ Stewart, all these people in the lineup, we're like, who the hell are these guys? Which is something that would have been said if you were watching the Baltimore Orioles a few years ago. But my God, the Baltimore Orioles have grown up. And the Mets went to Baltimore after Kansas City. And even though Baltimore is having a diametrically opposite year than the Royals are, they did the same thing to the Mets. They swept the Mets. Now, I know that this is a team a little closer both to your heart and your backyard. So take us on Jeff Heisen's Oriole way.
I was supposed to be at Camden Yards last Saturday to see Bruce Springsteen. I hope that Bruce is feeling better. I was at one of those three games, and I remember how quiet it was from the Mets side. Mets fans are loud. Mets fans are proud. Mets fans were barely there mentally. But I love going to Camden Yards. They don't have a Hall of Fame either, and they have a team with a rich history, including that loss to the Mets in 1969, which I always think of when I'm there. But their artifacts are on the club level, so you have to have a pass to see the World Series trophies and the uniforms, and that's not right. I don't like the way they've done that. That's a poorly run franchise that's getting the benefit of years of ineptitude and years of tanking or something close to tanking, but I have a fondness for them, and I'm glad that they're doing well. They have great fans, and I hope that they work out their lease situation with the city of Baltimore, because I don't want them moving. I like them being there.
Don't they have some sort of Wall of Fame type of setup outside, sort of a quasi Hall of Fame? I know a few teams have that. Maybe I'm confusing it with
On Utah Street, they have something, and they have some plaques for famous home runs, but nothing up to the level that they should have.
Yeah, well, they used to have in the accompanying build, the adjacent building, not the warehouse, but there was another one. There was an awesome Hall of Fame, and I'm sorry, and you know, for Baltimore sports and Maryland sports in general, with an accent on the Orioles, and I'm sorry, it's no longer there. The tanking has certainly worked out. They developed their youngsters. It's all come to fruition, and savvy trades for the likes of James McCann, I might add. Really, really good hitting catcher. I wonder where he came from. But the Angelos name gives anybody pause who wants to feel very good about the Orioles. But again, you know, I think of the Orioles. I think of that team that we played in 1969 that was just, you know, I was lucky enough to come along when the Yankees were nothing, basically, or nothing special. So to me, the Orioles were that type of team, that dynasty team, the team that was going to be there in October every year, and Memorial Stadium was on television every October. And they really were. 5 out of 6 years, they won the Eastern Division when that meant you were going to the playoffs. There was no other way to go. That's something I think that is being lost, by the way. The understanding that getting to the playoffs was really a success, not just, oh, yeah, we clinched a spot, throw it over there. So, you know, Brooks Robinson, Frank Robinson, Jim Palmer, Dave McNally, Mike Cuellar, we can both name those players. That's, you know, that's where my mind goes, along with, of course, the great Cal Ripken, the great Ripken family, the great Billy Ripken baseball card, and the great Camden Yards. So it's good to know that what felt like a percolating baseball town in the 90s is back on some level. And I hope they have great success come the postseason, even though there's an Angelos there. You remove a letter from Angelos, you have Angels. What do you know? The Los Angeles Angels. They are not the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. We all call them that anyway. They came to Citi Field to lead off our final flight of American League teams late August after we had one of those great series in Atlanta. And the Angels took two out of three. The Angels haven't taken two out of three from too many teams. And I don't think it really spoils the discussion on what you think of when you think of the Angels to note that Shohei Ohtani was the big attraction that weekend. And they have another big attraction who wasn't available, Mike Trout, but they have 24 or 25 other players as well. Tell me about the Los Angeles Angels of wherever they play.
I don't have much of an opinion about them. I do think about Mike Trout, who I felt bad for until he signed that long-term contract, because it didn't feel like a place where he should be. He felt like he should be at a place that was on TV all the time in a city that was winning at winning ball games. It felt like he should be a Met. Felt like he should be a Met, but and maybe he will be one day if he asks to be traded, because apparently the Angels has quietly said, you know, if you want to be traded, we can accommodate you. He has a no trade clause. So we'll see what happens this offseason. But that doesn't feel like a great team, despite the fact that they were a part of one of the greatest baseball movies of all time with Lieutenant Frank Drebin calling balls and strikes behind the plate.
At Dodger Stadium.
Right.
Against the Seattle Mariners. Very strange setting for that. No, I had a long lingering fondness for the Angels. I mean, they were okay by me before 2002. No great emotions one way or the other. I fell in love with them during the 2002 postseason, and they became that manifestation of favorite American League team for a while. And, you know, as those guys moved on, including Francisco Rodriguez becoming a New York Met, I just realized I don't really care about the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, the Anaheim Angels, California Angels, whatever they want to be called. But I do feel a certain level of simpatico for them as a franchise, just as that very major market team leaning toward a suburban fan base, having to put up with an overbearing, more established neighbor. And even though the Dodgers have been in Southern California only three more years than the Angels, it feels a lot longer because the Dodgers really put down roots in Southern California. And it feels like the Angels, who have drawn very well through the years, kind of going after the all other market. But, you know, again, I mentioned Shohei Ohtani. Certainly right before he came to Citi Field, he wasn't pitching anymore because he had some injury situation. So we only got to experience the awesome offensive weapon that was Ohtani. We got to experience a bunch of Angels, like I said. He probably won't be there next year. Maybe will be. You never know. Yeah, Trout is suddenly now up for grabs, possibly. And yeah, he could become a Met once his career is officially on the downside, it feels. And didn't they throw a lot of money at Anthony Rendon, who doesn't even want to speak to the media anymore about when he's going to get back? So, yeah, it always feels just like a mess over there. But you know what? I think back to 2002 in October and then beating the Yankees in the ALDS, playing that amazing seven-game World Series on the Rally Monkey. Always felt good about that. So good luck, Angels. As Charlie Townsend used to say, good luck, Angels. Okay, we now move on to a team that was playing for its life when it came to Citi Field in late August, early September. I guess it was late August. And yet, why were they playing for their life? This is the problem with interleague play. They were not the National League East. They were not the National League. They're an American League West team that really had to worry about the American League West. Yet, hey, could just do me a favor and go to Flushing, New York. The Texas Rangers. They took two out of three from the Mets. They should have swept. I'm saying that as a Mets fan. I don't mean like ideally they should have swept. They played one of the worst games I saw any team that wasn't the Mets play this year in choking away what seemed like an obvious win for them to end that series. Again, there are so many games. Who remembers anymore? But it was a couple of weeks ago. Anyway, the good old Texas Rangers. Is everything bigger in Texas or what?
First, an apology. Second, animosity. First, an apology. I and many of us made fun of Jacob deGrom when he said that he was going to Texas for the winning culture. We said, look how many games they won in the past. What winning culture? The Mets are going to be great. We were wrong. They've had a good season, although they've fallen down a little bit, but they are in contention for the playoffs. Second animosity, I hope they don't make it. They have Max Scherzer. Before I said I have fondness and wish Justin Verlander well, I wish the opposite of Max Scherzer. I have Corey Seager on my fantasy team. He's helped me, as has Bo Bichette. So I've been watching Texas all season. Thank you, Corey Seager. But I hope Texas remains on the outs as far as the playoff chase goes.
Yeah, I'm sort of agnostic on the subject of the Texas Rangers, even agnostic on the subject of Max Scherzer. Although when Verlander faced Scherzer very recently and Verlander talked to Scherzer and Scherzer did not get out as many Houston Astros as he would have liked, I wasn't playing the world's tiniest violin. Let's put it that way. I had a childhood fascination with the Texas Rangers when Billy Martin managed them, because it was one of these teams, and they hadn't been in Texas for very long, but even when they'd been the Washington Senators, they never seemed to be any good. And suddenly here was this team with all these appealing characters that from half a country away seemed really interesting. And I really wished good things for them for a couple of years. And I remember seeing a Texas Rangers cap for sale at Shea Stadium or environs, perhaps as like that subway stand that used to sell merchandise. And I was a little annoyed that my mother said, can I get a Mets cap? Sure, we'll get you a Mets cap. Well, can I get a Rangers cap too? Stop being greedy. You're not getting anything. And that doesn't bother me still, almost 50 years later. But I was glad when the Texas Rangers finally broke through in the 90s, won a few division titles because they'd waited a long time. They rode Nolan Ryan for all he was worth. And it's nice to see him not facing the Mets in those days, because there was no interleague play. When he played for the National League's Houston Astros, it was tough to remember we once liked Nolan Ryan. In the modern era, the more modern era anyway, came so close to winning in 2011, much like Cleveland did in 2016. Feel kind of bad about that. But that was the way it went. And again, like you said, Corey Seager, talented team. They ought to make the playoffs because they've been up there all year, but they got a lot of talented teams in the American League, it seems. They all look talented to us. It is funny. You mentioned Jacob deGrom, who, again, is just so faded from our radar, even as a Texas Ranger, because he's been injured. You know, he shows up, the Rangers start winning. Scherzer shows up, the Rangers kind of stop winning. Make of that what you will. Hey, let's finish that that last interleague homestand where we entered September. And those Seattle Mariners, who have to travel farther than anybody to get to New York, I don't know, maybe San Diego has to travel a long way, but they're a National League team. They know the way. The Seattle Mariners, three games at Citi Field. They had been the hottest team in baseball. They had just taken over the lead from the Texas Rangers in the American League West. Lots of young, appealing players. And we took two out of three from them. That was pretty exciting. Mariners fever. Did you catch it or what?
I don't mind the Mariners. I don't know what's not to like. They have a nice ballpark. I spent a very nice evening there several years ago. Bought a ticket 20 minutes before the game, sat in the front row for $20, ate some delicious sushi. I thought it was a very nice ballpark. I like Dave Sims, one of their play-by-play guys. He's one of us. He's a New Yorker. I like Dave Sims. One of their play-by-play announcers is Aaron Goldsmith, who I really hadn't heard of, but there was a great piece on him in The Athletic. I have nothing against the Mariners. I feel badly for all the plane rides that their players have to take. That's why they want a franchise in Portland, so at least they have one close rival. But nothing against the Mariners.
Yeah, it's hard. Again, the American League, we're not supposed to have anything against anybody. For 3 days, they were our blood rival. Dave Sims, would want you to know, though, he worked in New York. He's actually from Philadelphia.
Ah,
but he is a Northeasterner. That's a phrase people who aren't in New York use to kind of like get some of our reflected glory. We love everybody. The Mariners, you know, it's funny. I remember, again, talked about the Blue Jays, 77, opening packs of cards. I remember being very excited the Mariners had Seattle had a new team, because I remembered the Seattle Pilots. And collecting Seattle Pilots baseball cards became a little bit of a thing for me as a kid. all from 1970 at that point. But by the which point they were the Brewers. I had been to Seattle as a kid. I loved the city. Thought I would someday live there, perhaps. I haven't been back except to change planes once. But never got excited about the Mariners in real time. Episodically, 1995, Ken Griffey, Edgar Martinez beating the Yankees in the first regular division series. So we appreciated that. And yeah, exciting team to watch. I tell you though, Julio Rodriguez comes to New York. I should have been like, hey, I'm here to see Julio Rodriguez. And it was more like, I'm going to talk about 23 things with my friend during the game. And oh yeah, there's Julio Rodriguez. So some of that can be a little overstated, but I was happy to take the measure of them and wish the Mariners a good long trip to wherever they were going next. I don't remember where they went next. Maybe they were going to Philadelphia. But, there's that episode of The Simpsons where Mr. Burns invites Homer to his house and it's this massive estate and it's all very impressive. Then he brings him down to the basement and Homer says, gee, this isn't as nice as the rest of the house. And Mr. Burns says, yes, I should really stop ending the tour here. And that's how I feel about the Minnesota Twins, because this should be just a marvelous crescendo when in fact it's the Minnesota Twins. But that happens to be the final American League team the Mets played in 2023. This is not a reflection of Target Field, which I was surprised to hear Howie Rose refer to it this weekend. He thinks that it is the jewel of all jewels, of all the ballparks we visit, he said. And, that includes San Francisco and Pittsburgh, which I know he's fond of. And it looks great on TV. I haven't been there. Hope to be there someday. But the Twins are holding down first place in the American League Central, are probably going to take first place. It's not a great division. They're the only team that has had a winning record, and they maintain that winning record by taking 2 out of 3 from the Mets on the first weekend of the NFL season. I know that's important to some people. Minnesota Twins, New York Mets. This is where I just said, oh, my God, why are we playing the Twins? But I said that a lot this year. But we did play the Twins. What did you think about playing the Twins?
Nothing really. I didn't have one good thought or the other. I did think of the movie Little Big League, which was one of my top five, but I don't have many thoughts about them. I guess we're tied to them because of Carlos Correa. They re-signed him after the Mets decided not to, and their fans gave him a standing ovation. Did you think that was nice?
I don't think it's nice that we didn't sign him, except for looking at this kind of season he's had. I think it's nice that they gave him an ovation. I guess they, as was pointed out on the various broadcasts, they were trying to give him the Trey Turner treatment as they gave their struggling superstar in Philadelphia. Minnesota nice, I suppose. I went through most of my life not worrying about the Minnesota Twins one way or the other. They were a very good team when I first started watching baseball. They would succumb to the Baltimore Orioles in October, the Oriole way to the World Series. When I think of the Twins in a non-Mets context, because when I think of the Twins in a Mets context, I think of the Frank Viola deal, which was such a huge deal at the time, which I don't think has a great historical footprint, but need I remind you, David West and Kevin Tapani and one other guy who had Rick Aguilera, for God's sake, and a couple of minor leaguers. Anyway, Rod Carew, maybe not a member of the tribe specifically, but Rod Carew is the twin in my mind. I know he played a bunch of years for the Angels too. I don't know why this is such a happy memory more than just a fleeting one. I'm delivering Newsday in the summer of 1977. One of my customers asks me to leave the paper in their mailbox. I open the mailbox on the day Time Magazine is delivered. Rod Carew is on the cover of Time Magazine that week because he's chasing 400, which is a huge story because baseball is still huge in this country in 1977. It makes the cover of Time Magazine, which is still a huge arbiter of what's huge in America in 1977. I stopped delivering my papers for a few minutes, and I just stand there and I read the entire article about Rod Carew in the summer of 77. And then, with my change that I make delivering Newsday, I go over to the cozy nook where I buy magazines and see Rod Carew's on the cover of Sports Illustrated, too, with Ted Williams, because nobody's hit 400 since Ted Williams, and I'm going to read about what Ted Williams thinks of Rod Carew, what Rod Carew thinks of trying to hit 400. And, you know, just of all the players in the American League that I have up on a pedestal who I've seen in my lifetime, I don't think I have anybody on a higher pedestal than, I believe, 8-time batting champion. I could be wrong on that. Maybe it's 7, maybe it's 9. Rod Carew of the Minnesota Twins. So meh to the Minnesota Twins, but to the all-time Minnesota Twin. Any excuse to think about Rod Carew, even if it's listening to Adam Sandler in December, is a good time. So, like I said, we played everybody. We played 15 interleague opponents, 16 series, 19 wins, 27 losses. I'm glad we talked about it this week, because next week I'll probably remember even less about the actual series in question. But that was a part of our season. And until somebody tells us differently, it's going to be a part of every season.
And finally, the Mets didn't have many all-stars this year, but come Monday and every day, our love is alive for the New York Mets.
You know, come next February, what are we going to do? We're going to climb aboard the Dreamweaver train, and we are going to weave dreams. Not with Earl Weaver, but the team that gave us David Wright. We will take inspiration from Gary Wright. We really want to know those 2024 Mets. Not just yet. We're not done with 2023. We got a couple more weeks to go. But you know what? We hope to have changes in attitude, changes in latitude, really changes in longitude, because we're in fourth place. That latitude sucks. So let's get it up there sooner or later.
Rest in peace, Jimmy Buffett, Gary Wright, and Steve Harwell, the former lead singer of Smash Mouth. And unfortunately, one more. Also for Robbie Robertson. Even if your name isn't Fanny, we thank you for taking a load off and listening to National League Town. We'll be back next week with more. So until then, I'm Jeff Heisen.
I'm walking on the sun. I'm Greg Prince.
And as always, let's go Mets. Copyright 2023, music provided by the Royal Arctic Institute. Their latest album, From Coma to Catharsis, is now available on vinyl. For more information and tour dates, check them out on Bandcamp.